Alrighty, welcome back, Iowa. You're listening to Around the House. My name is Tim Hetty, and I got my friend Rod Fox over here. How's it going, Rod?
It's going well, Tim. I think fall is here.
Yeah, a little cooler. Good,
yeah,
we need snow.
Yeah, well, I guess we could jump right through the fall and go right to winter, but we'll take a little moisture if we can get some.
You know, that would be my preference. I just love going snowmobiling.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, you don't snowmobile around here much, so it can snow like the Dickens up there in Wisconsin for you.
Well,
so.
I'll go, too.
Yeah.
You know me. I'll just call in one day, and I'm going to be gone for a few days.
That's right.
And,
you just don't show up. We look for you on the side of a milk carton. But, no, you know, by the time we get your picture printed, you know you're back. So.
Yeah, there you go. So, anyways, so the last couple of weeks we've been talking about, just questions from homeowners that send them in, and we really do love your questions. And if you have any comments or questions for us, please go to MidwestBasementSystems.com, go to the About Us section, and go down to where it says radio show. And if you click on that, there's a place right in there where you can leave us your comments, your questions. You know, if you don't go along with something we're saying, or you can listen to pre-cast shows.
Right.
So you can download them, put them on your iPod.
Absolutely.
You know, that way everybody will think you're cool because you're listening to Rod and Tim.
Well, you are if you know.
Right.
So.
Now, you were telling me earlier that this is Fire Prevention Week.
This is near the end of the Fire Prevention Week, and we thought what a better way to, help spread the word about fire prevention and fire safety than to kind of – we've talked about this in the past, and we've had we had a assistant fire chief from Ankeny on in the past, which, you know, you can go back and listen to that show. Mm-hmm. That's archived on our website also. But we wanted to touch base on a couple of things because, again – I think this is one of those things that people either take for granted that everybody's going to know what to do when there's an emergency that happens in their house, or most people live in denial that, hey, Tim, you know, I'm never going to be one of those statistics that has a house fire. You know, we're prepared. I bought a fire extinguisher. I don't know how to operate it. But, you know, in a panic situation, I'm sure it'll all come to me. You know, just instantly I'm going to be calm and cool, and, you know, I'm going to be like the super firefighter. I won't have any panic because, you know, my house is filled with smoke and I can't find the dog and my kids are screaming in the background and, you know, I'll be all cool. Well, the only way that's going to happen is if you prepare for it and you practice. You have to practice these things. So.
And, you know, we talk about stuff like this all the time on the show, not necessarily this particular subject, but we talk about our house being basically a series of different systems,
right?
You know, and everything working together, and we call that building science. We talk about building science on this show, and basically we're here every week to talk about a cleaner, drier, healthier, safer, and more energy efficient home. That means everything has to work together for this. You know, you have to think about your ventilation system as system.
That's correct.
You have to think about your basement as a system. You have to think about your windows as a system, your ceiling as a system, your roof, everything, even the ventilation of your attic. Every single thing that you do in your home, you need to think of as a system.
Right.
You know, and if we think about that as our body, you know, you have your circulatory system and your nervous system and all these things working together to make you live and breathe. Our house is exactly the same way.
That's correct.
So when we talk about fire prevention, we need to back up and take things one step at a time.
That's correct.
So let's just start in the basement.
Right.
You know, because this is something obviously we're familiar with. But, you know, your egress window. And we've had a number of questions lately. People are adding on. People are, even though the interest rates are so low right now. And I don't know if I told you this. I'm refinancing my house now.
Yeah, you did at an unbelievable rate.
2.38. I mean, I had well under 4 before.
Yeah.
And I never thought that I would see this, but I'm 2.375 interest.
That's crazy.
And in my view, this is a point where I stop paying extra.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, it's going to be a 15-year note. I guess I'm paying for 15 years because for that kind of money, I'm not paying extra. I can do better with my money than they can.
Yeah, absolutely. So.
But at any rate,
well, this is a big push for 2012 with Fire Prevention Week is two ways out. And so going into the egress, I mean, some homes, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a walkout, you know, okay, maybe you've got a built-in, you know,
however,
ability to get out. But
by code, the egress has to be in the bedroom.
That's exactly right.
Okay, you cannot have a door between your bed and your egress.
Yeah, that's my point. Most people would say, well, I'm on a walkout, you know, so I've got this secondary access point to get out of the house. No, you don't. If you have a finished basement and you have a bedroom downstairs, you should, you know, be required in certain areas. You know, in new home designs, code's putting it that way. But if you've got a home that, you know, you put or had somebody come do a remodel, or there was a basement bedroom down there when you bought the house and there's no egress, you are so at risk for having something tragic
happen. Forget about the codes.
Yeah.
You know, they should have done better for you, but forget about the codes.
That's right.
You are at risk.
Yes.
You know, and this is important stuff. Now, I know you've heard this one. Well, I've got these windows down here. I can get out in case of a fire, because somebody doesn't want to spend the money or something to get an egress window. Let me explain to you what happens when there's a fire, okay? You have smoke.
Yeah.
And most of the time, correct me if I'm wrong, but most fatalities in a fire situation are because of the smoke, not necessarily
smoke inhalation.
The fire.
Correct.
Smoke rises. It starts at the top. So if you think about your basement windows, okay, looking up at your basement windows, do you feel like, number one, you can even find the thing if there's a smoky room?
That's correct.
And like you said before, you're in a panic.
You're right.
And you've got to get out of the building. What are you going to do? Pole vault up there? You know, give me a break. And then, you know, can you get out through the window well? Is it full of dirt, weeds, or snow, or ice, or whatever? And one guy, I was overlooking at a basement, and, you know, I brought this up. You're going to finish this down here. You need an egress window. And we provide those at Midwest Basement Systems. And obviously, he didn't want to spend the money because they're not the cheapest thing on the shelf. Well, I've got these other windows. I looked at him and I said, okay, right now, we're in calm, cool, collective. There's nothing going on, really. I'd like to see you get out right now. You can find the window. You can see the window. This should be the ideal time for you to get out. Let me see you get through that. Well, I'm not going to do it right. You know, I mean, then the excuses start coming out. But if you can't do it when you don't have to, what are the odds that you can do it?
Well, I mean, that's like looking at a person going, do you have insurance, you know, on your car? And, well, yeah. Well, why? And the majority of the people are not going to say, because the state requires me to have it.
Right.
You know, people buy insurance for what? For the catastrophic event that may happen, that's you get in an accident or someone hits you, you know, completely out of the scope of how your day was going to go. But you have insurance for what? To protect you. This is what we're talking about. We're talking about making an investment that protects you. We're not saying, oh, it's going to – I mean, you return on investment, sure. There's, you know, there's some benefit of that too. But that's not why you put an egress window in. You put it in the event that something tragic would happen and the lowest risk possible of not being able to get out is now available to you. You want to have that ability to get out of your house.
Right. And, you know, a lot of times you're not even talking about you. Okay. These things – if you really look at the codes, which you should, I mean, I don't know if they're online or not, but you can easily call down to like Polk County and get a fax copy or an email copy or whatever. But the codes are kind of like, your youngest child. They're not for you.
That's correct.
They're for that 6 or 7 year old kid that you're probably going to put in the basement.
Right.
You know, so that kid definitely can't get out the window, which is 6 feet up or whatever.
That's correct. You know, and in a previous career of mine, you know, I had to go through confined space training. So I used to wear an SCBA, which is self-contained breathing apparatus, and I used to have to go through smoke houses. And what the smoke houses were, they're filled with theatrical smoke, which, you know, you can sit and breathe and it's not going to harm you. So you don't. But I tell you, the disorientation that you have and the closed-in feeling, if you suffer from any kind of claustrophobia. And maybe you've never been put in a situation where I don't think I'm claustrophobic. I don't like small confined spaces. But I was put into a Quonset out it was actually in Virginia. It was Quantico, Virginia. And I was put in the middle of and they walked me in. It was real dark. They had filled it up with theatrical smoke. And they told me to close my eyes while I was walking. No, that's not a problem because somebody was taking me in there. And then they let go of me and they said, okay, open your eyes. And I couldn't see anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally couldn't see anything, had no idea what direction I was, and it was filled with furniture. And they said a couple of things. You have to be able to try and find your way out of this. You know, I know the state fire marshal's office has one of these smoke trailers where they fill it with theatrical smoke also.
Right. Yep.
And, you know, and allow kids to try and find their way out. But this was like an 80-foot-long Quonset.
And you've only got so much time. If
exactly
your building
right.
is filled with smoke like that.
Yeah. So, and I will tell you, you know, so people that think they are, you know, tougher or whatever, who've never been put in this situation, and, you know, until I was and had to go through this training, all of a sudden you get some panic. And I knew I was perfectly safe. I had, you know, other people in the room who were, you know, ready to help me out if I needed to because they knew, you know, these are the trainers.
Right.
But for me, all of a sudden your heart rate goes, your respiration start, and you start to panic. You get this feeling of real uneasiness. Now, that was in training. Now imagine there's a fire.
Right, because you knew that, you know, you knew in your mind that you were
right.
perfectly safe.
That's right.
You know, you could breathe the smoke around you and all this stuff. And, yeah, so anyways, we got to get to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this. We're going to talk about this fire prevention through the entire show. But I want to go through some of the codes and regulations for egress windows and stuff that the reasoning behind it, stuff that makes this stuff a good idea.
Okay.
So we'll be right back with a little bit more. Alrighty, welcome back, Iowa. You're listening to Around the House, and we're talking about fire prevention because it is Fire Prevention Week. And we were talking about egress windows. And, you know, at Midwest Basement Systems, it's certainly not our career to put in egress windows. But we do have egress windows. They're nice egress windows. Usually we'll only do them if we're doing like a basement finishing project. We're not out there trying to push them alone.
Right.
Because, you know, as a business, it's not that great of a thing. So I don't want anybody to take this wrong, like, hey, call us for sure for your egress window. If you've got a bedroom downstairs, you just need an egress window.
Right. And, you know, as with any industry, you're going to find a value. You know, you're always going to find some company that's going to put in a low quality, low value product because
right.
they see someone is willing to make that, you know, that jump for them. But again, and what Tim's going to talk about is, you know, when this is a value item. You want to make sure that you purchase a product that makes sense to you,
right.
you
yep.
know, and I think you'll go through the casement crank out windows, things that really don't pertain to or fit in the guidelines of what we call an egress. They actually are more deemed as a daylight window because when the home was built, there was no bedroom down there, but they put a window in that would
right.
maybe just meet code. And we've talked about codes before.
And codes change.
Yeah, codes change. And meeting a code does not mean that it's the best product for you. They're saying,
right.
hey, we have to have a minimum at some point, and here's what it is. However, that minimum does not mean that you can't have better, you know,
right.
and there's a reason for that.
You know, and I'm going to go off of my memory of the code. Before I came in here, I actually forgot to print it off. So, you know, I'm going to go off my memory here. But let's talk about, first of all, the height that this thing can be off of the basement floor, okay? 44 inches. The last time I checked, it was 44 inches.
That's correct.
And what we're talking about there is from the surface of the floor to the highest point of the bottom of the window. Okay, so your framework, from to the highest point of the bottom of the window. So if you're stepping off the basement floor, your foot doesn't have to raise any more than 44 inches to be outside.
That's correct.
Now, I also want to say that this depends on whether or not this is a good idea depends on who has to get out. Okay, if you're relying on a 5 or 6 year old kid to get out, let's face it. Are they going to pole vault up there? What's going to happen? So there has to be some kind of, and I don't know what the code is here, but my point is there should be some kind of like an old trunk or a chair or something to where your child can actually get up and out of here.
Right.
You know, hugely important. Matter of fact, I don't know if this may have been before your time at Midwest Basement Systems, Rod, but you ever seen the commercial that
yes,
my
I
daughters
did.
Were actually in this
oh,
commercial?
Yeah. Yeah,
there was
absolutely.
A time where we really wanted to do a lot of egress windows. And,
yep.
you know,
but it was a great commercial because I think you filled your basement with theatrical smoke.
Right.
And, yeah. You know, showed the girls actually getting in and out. Or getting out of the home, which was imperative. In fact,
right.
I had that on my computer at the time, and I would show that to customers so they could understand what it is that you're looking for when a child has to get out. You know, one of the things I would, I, You know, I know state code says that kindergartners and first graders cannot be on any level at school other than the first level. They have to be on the first level. They can't be on a second level or in a basement classroom. They have to be on the first level.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, you know, think about it this way. There's a certain age where a child is developed physically where now you're asking them to perform a certain thing. And maybe they shouldn't be down in a basement by themselves in a bedroom
right.
until they're like 12, 13, 14 years old. Just to get them away from you. It's a joke. But, you know.
The egress window provides a perfect escape route for your teenager to get out and go party.
Yeah, exactly. Well, put an alarm on it, okay, if you're worried about that. But the idea behind it is you're asking, you know, don't be asking a 4, 5, 6-year-old to physically manipulate or understand what's going on because they're going to be overwhelmed. But if you practice, practice, and say, hey, you know, if you're downstairs playing and something happens, you should know where to go. You know, we're not just, you know, that's where you want the – but, I mean, to be woken up in the middle of the night, be disoriented, finding out, and now trying to, you know, get out of an egress window. A 5-year-old's probably – that's probably the wrong spot to have them sleeping. You know?
Right.
I would get them closer
because
to you.
Because, again, you have to consider the panic factor here.
Yes.
And – you know, mentally prepared, and I've thought about this lately because my youngest daughter is now turning 16 this month, and, you know, she's going to get a driver's license and everything, and, you know, I may have a biased view on this, but is she indeed mentally prepared if something happens?
Right.
You know, and she probably is. You know, I probably don't give her enough credit. But, you know, at 14, I think, in Iowa, you can get a permit to drive to school.
Right.
Well, I wouldn't allow that because I honestly didn't believe at the time that if she got in an accident, she'd be mentally prepared to deal with this accident.
That's correct.
You know, so I made her wait until 16. I wasn't a very popular dad over it. But we have to think about this stuff in a basement.
Right.
Is your 5-year-old that you've stuffed in the basement, you know, and I don't want to say stuffed, I guess, but is your 5-year-old that you've made this bedroom for in the basement, is this child mentally prepared in a situation to get out of the building?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and that's – we care for our kids enough to make the decisions that aren't going to be popular.
Right.
You know, that's just parenting.
Sometimes we just got to be a jerk.
Yeah. Well, I call it parenting.
Right. Yeah. I guess you can call it either way. But, you know, and then the opening that you need. And, you know, what do you remember what that is?
Yeah. It's a minimum of 5.7 square feet of movable window space. But understand this, you know – you should be able to visualize a fireman with an air pack being able to get in and out of that window. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to have a window that slides, the opening itself, that when the window slides open, it has to be big enough for a fireman with an air pack to be getting in and out. Now, don't be just thinking, well, that's big enough for my 7-year-old to get in and out of. No. You know, this is the reason because,
right.
as you were talking about earlier, Tim, and I didn't want to butt in at that point, but I'm going to make my point now. You know, our homes are built with building science. I mean, there's a way that we build them. There's a way that our home reacts. Firemen are trained to attack a fire in a certain way based on what level of engulfment, you know, or what level of fire or what they see when they arrive at the situation. So it's not just, hey, everybody show up and squirt water on it. You know, they
right.
they do specific things because they understand a fire burns in a certain way. And so to try and save your home, they have a process that they go through also. So it's, you know, there's plans that are made. So, again, it follows back to what we had said. You have to have a fire escape plan. You know, they have a plan of how they're going to attack a fire. Your home works, you know, and will burn in a certain way because of building science. I mean, it's just there's mm-hmm. so many things that people don't consider when they own a home.
Right. You know, and the unfortunate part is a lot of time first-time home buyers are handed these brand-new homes.
Right.
And they don't really know how they're put together and everything.
That's correct.
And we've got some interesting points about that coming up, but I guess, well, let's get through this egress one.
Yeah.
So 5.7 square feet.
Is a minimum of the movable window space. Again,
right.
you know, now let's talk window types. I mean, because the window types are
right.
so different. We only install one type, and that is a slide.
It's a slider, and the window size itself is 48 by 48.
Right.
But, you know, obviously it's a slider. So when you open it up for the egress, you really only have half of that.
Yeah, you have half of that.
Goes well over and above the 5.7 square
right.
feet
anyways. And if necessary, you know, those sashes can easily be removed by, you know, somebody from a fireman if they needed something bigger. But it's larger than 5.7 square feet.
Right. And when you say a fireman removing them, I think you're talking about kicking your window in.
Oh, yeah. It's not going to be a delicate way for them. They're not going to try and save your screen or save the sash so it, you know, can be easily reinstalled after your house. Yeah, after your house is burnt to the ground.
Right.
No.
Well, let me make a point about that real quick. You know, the type of window is extremely important. Everybody knows what a casement window is. A casement window is a crank-out window.
Right.
I have seen casement windows used commonly for egress windows.
Yes.
Let me, how do I put this delicately? Don't do it.
Yeah, bad idea.
Bad idea. A crank-out window, for one thing, it requires a tool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've all seen our casement windows upstairs, and we've all seen the handle somewhere in the kitchen junk drawer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again, imagine that you've got a 7-year-old kid trying to get out.
I had to laugh. One time I was at a customer's house, and they had a casement crankout window in their teenager, and they took it off because they didn't want the kid getting out at night. And I said, that's really a bad idea, because what if you want them to get out during a fire? And it was like a light bulb went off. They were like...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Get an alarm system that chimes maybe when the window is open.
Yeah. Get a dog. Whatever.
Let's say it's wintertime.
Yeah.
Let's say that even though you have a cover on the window or on the window well outside, let's say that somehow the wind blew a bunch of snow in and now you've got the whole thing packed with snow.
Right. You know, and we see it a lot where most people don't put covers on.
Right.
They, you know, for some unknown reason. Decided not to. In fact, I was at a customer's house this last week.
I would say that more of them don't have covers than do.
Beautiful home built, and what they did is they used large boulders to outline, and they had a tapered design, and they wanted that look instead of a standard well look. And, you know, he asked me, he was having a moisture issue that filled up, and it was halfway up his window during a heavy rainstorm. Well, the drain had plugged. And, you know, he was getting water coming up over the top of the top of the window. And I said, you know, hey, you need a cover, you know, but, you've got this custom design and it's just not going
to
work.
Well, we got to get to another break real quick. We'll be right back with more Around the House. All righty, welcome back, Iowa. You're listening to Around the House. We're talking about fire prevention and, you know, we're not going to get as far as we wanted to this show, obviously. But we're talking about egress windows and what makes sense and what doesn't. And we're talking about the opening.
Yeah.
And you have to put yourself sometimes in the situation of a child because that's really what they're designed for. And very, very few parents have their basement or their bedroom in the basement.
Right.
Okay. Most of the time it's for the young children or teenagers, you know, so they can have their friends over and whatnot. But egress windows are so important. Most of the time, fires start in the kitchen. Most of the time, when you walk up your basement stairs, you're in the kitchen. You need to think about that. The stairs are not an acceptable escape in that scenario.
No.
So the egress window, you've got to have the opening so that you can get out. The well means everything as far as I'm concerned.
That's
most
correct.
Wells do not have covers on them, and there are codes as related to the well covers.
That's correct.
You know, no more than 10 pounds pressure to remove the well cover.
Right.
That's extremely important because, again, your child can lift 10 pounds. You know, most children can lift 10 pounds. If your child is not capable of that, they shouldn't be sleeping in the basement anyways. I always tell people also, you should have some stuff around that can maybe be thrown through the window.
Yeah.
Okay. Even let's say that it's in the wintertime and the window is frozen shut. It just won't open. Fine. Pick up this chair, throw it through the window, and get out of the basement.
Yeah.
Or pick up this VCR or this dad's bowling trophy, whatever. Break the window out.
Yeah.
Don't feel bad about it and get out of the building. If you see smoke or smell smoke, it's time to get out.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we see a lot of the egress windows just being a corrugated well. And those corrugated wells, again, a lower cost product that you know, we've seen a lot of damage because of soil expansion. Actually crushing these things.
Right. Crushes them like a beer can.
Right. But what we see is, you know, when I look at them, I don't see a stair or a ladder system or anything. So now you get the kid into this well, and, you know, it's 5.5 feet. And
right, they have no way out.
They can't jump up to even grab the edge.
I think the codes are, correct me if I'm wrong, but is it 40 inches?
Yeah, you got to have steps. Yeah. You got to have steps or a ladder that's going to be able to be manipulated so someone can get out. You know, and you mentioned this earlier, Tim. You know, people who, these first-time home buyers, how many times, or and I guess for you listeners also, just ask yourself, if I have an egress window, have I ever gotten out of it?
Right.
You know, I would bet. Yeah, I would bet more than 95% of the people who are listening or ask themselves that question will not say, oh, sure, yeah, I've done that. I bet you haven't.
Yep. And
you should try
if you've got your children with bedrooms in the basement, they need to be trained and they need to practice this.
That's right.
You know, because I can tell you right now, and we've got a guy that is a foreman in our shop. And he was a volunteer fireman for many, many years.
Yeah.
And he's not anymore, but he was for many, many years. We got talking about this subject one day, and he said if a house is engulfed in flames, they don't go in anymore.
No.
They don't even attempt to go in anymore.
That's correct.
So, and the reason that we'll talk about this probably in the fourth segment, but the reason for this is the houses are no longer built to be able to withstand a fireman going through them.
Right. There's such a fear that that you're putting the firefighters at risk based on some of the building products that are being used now that are acceptable as a building product.
Right.
But yet under extreme duress with fire, they lose their load capacity or their ability to withstand the weight of building products furniture or freezers or refrigerators in the house.
Or a man walking around.
Or a man walking through the house that they actually, you know, and we've talked about this in the past and we'll touch upon it again. But, you know, again, with the egress windows, folks, you got to practice.
And one thing to, and I always tell people this, one thing to make sure you practice with your family is, okay, we have now a meeting place, okay? We're not just going to circle the house hoping everybody got out all right.
That's right.
We want a meeting place outside the home. And don't make it the mailbox, which is 20 feet from the house. A burning house is very, very hot.
Right.
So make it like the neighbor across the street's mailbox or their tree or maybe their front porch. Everybody is now going to meet over here in the event that our house is on fire. That way, you know, I mean, most dads like me would run back into a burning building to save their child. I wouldn't do it for my pet, but I would do it for my child. And you know what? You love the family pet. A family pet is not worth dying for.
No.
So let's just leave Fido in the house. He probably is already
out. He's probably already out.
He
probably
doesn't
got
know
out
where
first.
The meeting place is, you know.
That's exactly right. You know, and you know, if you live on a farm, it doesn't have to be the neighbor, obviously. It just be a pole barn or a building outside.
Your barn, your tractor, whatever. Yeah, not the tractor probably.
Get far enough away. There isn't anything physically in your house that you need to try and save, the old photo album, the, you know, the memory book, the wedding photos, all of that stuff can easily be replaced. And if you haven't digitized it and saved it on a hard drive offsite, well, shame on you. But that's I'm not saying that you need to do that. What I'm saying is, you know, homes can be rebuilt. You've still got the memories. You may have lost some of those things that, you know, but you're still alive.
Right.
So, you know, plan a fire escape plan.
Yep, exactly.
And practice. Yeah.
You know, you can't get too much practice. Anyways, so that's enough about that. And let's just go right back into this floor joist thing. We just touched on it.
Wood eye joist.
Yeah, and what we're talking about there is about a 2x2 runner on the top and the bottom of a joist and a piece of OSB. And what is that, 5/8 OSB?
Yep.
Or 5/8 OSB, and it looks kind of like an I-beam, if you will, but we call it an I-joist.
Right.
Basically, everything's glued together, and I don't know if anybody's ever thrown a piece of OSB into a fire, but it doesn't take long to burn.
Why is that, Tim?
Well, because it's made out of scrap wood and glue.
I was going to say, the adhesives are much more flammable than the wood.
And it takes, about 5 minutes to really to make the thing unsafe to walk on.
That's correct. I mean, and what, you know, when that assistant chief from Ankeny was here, he was explaining to us, you know, what the averages are. From the time the call comes in for the, you know, depending on where that is, it's like 17-minute response time. Mm-hmm. From the time the phone call comes into the fire department, whether or not it's a manned fire department, it's a volunteer. The averages are about 17 minutes. Okay. you know, by the time they get there and get set up, it's well over 20 minutes. 20 minutes, they know that the wood eye joists have been, if it's been engulfed, they've been completely compromised. They will not send people in anymore.
Right.
So, I mean, when you start looking at the kind of products to use, in fact, some friends of my my wife's, I stopped by. They're building a brand new house, and there was the load of wood eye joists, and I brought up some, you know, some of this information to them, and you know, they contacted the contractor, and he said, "Oh, it's a perfectly safe product to build with." And I said, "You're absolutely correct. It is. However,
as long as it's not on fire,
as long as it's not on fire."
Yeah.
And I said, "You know, there are several products out there." I introduced them to and said, "You know, if you choose to, you know, there are some fire protective coatings that can be placed on these wood eye joists, you know, and, you know, during the building process, very simple to do, that would give you, you know, a better, well, you know, the house is being built without your rod's advice." So,
yeah, you know, yeah,
I, you know, all I can say is I brought that to their attention that they chose not to look into it anymore. You know, hey, I feel comfortable and that I,
well, you know, yeah, in the grand scheme of things, I can't believe it. I mean, maybe it makes a huge, huge financial difference. I don't know. But for my money, if I was going to build a house, I would insist on two buys,
yep,
but, you know, or some kind of better construction. What kills me, though, you know, being in the foundation repair industry, is that, the loads that they've figured out that these things will take, and it just doesn't work out that way sometimes.
Well, they've engineered and manufactured a product of the byproduct of wood, you know,
right.
So you're taking wood scraps and you're putting this material and you're compressing it and adding adhesives to it and engineering something that is taking place of a solid piece of wood. You know, that's great, but I'm like you, Tim. I would insist on standard two-bys.
Right.
You know, to
I mean, the firefighters are still not going to run into your building, especially if it's new, because they're going to assume the worst.
Yeah.
And, you know, how many times have you hear these horror stories where a fireman walks through the front door, kicks down the front door, goes in,
and
drops straight to the basement.
Yeah.
You know, because it looks like a safe floor.
A couple of firefighters in Michigan died that way, you know. And,
yep,
and there's many more horror stories. I mean, I'm looking at an article right now where they're talking about it. And, you know, it's they actually have to go back and they've done testing, and you and I have watched some of those videos where they truly show how quickly that wood eye joist will burn.
Yeah, get on YouTube.
Yeah.
I mean, these are not hard. I mean, it's
yeah,
not like we know somebody, so we have access to these yeah, videos. It's not hard to find this stuff.
Yeah. Like I said, the one I'm looking at right now is common building materials pose deadly threat to firefighters. Wood eye joist burned quickly and floors will fail. I mean, that's, you know, you Google that. You know, you're going to find the information on it. It's, but it's, you know, and in defense of the contractors that are building with this product, they're probably not being told, you know, this information.
Yeah, just, you know, you get to standard building practices,
mm-hmm,
you know, and permits and what you need to get by, you know, especially if you're building a spec home. Spec
right,
home means that they're building the house in the speculation that they can sell the house.
Right.
You know, so nobody's really said, okay, these are my plans, go out and build me the house. They have to do this stuff to compete,
right,
because the house next door, what are they going to do, get an extra 10 grand?
That's right.
Same exact house. Well, this one's built better. Well, so?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've got investors to answer to, bankers to answer to, all this stuff, and obviously they want to make money, and they can't make money until they sell the house.
That's correct.
So it really kind of is a bad situation all around. We got to get to another break. We'll be right back with more Around the House. Alrighty, welcome back, guys. Well, you're listening to Around the House. We're talking about fire prevention because this is the end of the fire prevention week.
That's right, for 2012.
And,
so
yeah, and to be honest with you, they must not publicize this any place I listen to because
well,
I don't listen to a lot of news and network stuff, to be honest with you. So
I don't think people, you know, are, you know, it's not hot topic news until something, we're more reactive instead of preventative.
Well,
know?
And especially this year, everybody's talking about the presidential
yeah,
race and all
yeah,
that, and we don't certainly don't want to get on that topic.
Yeah.
Not with Rod in the room.
No,
anyways.
I
very
have,
passionate about
I
his
may
beliefs,
have an opinion. Well, the you know, we've got one segment left, and what I want to talk about now, there's three things. I want to talk about fire extinguishers, I want to talk about smoke detectors, and I also want to talk about what was the last thing I wanted to talk about, Tim?
I don't know. Let's start with fire extinguishers.
Okay, we'll start with fire extinguishers.
It'll come to you.
Yeah, it definitely will. If you don't have a fire extinguisher, obviously you need to get one.
Right.
You know, there are several different types. I know that, you know, you can go to Target or one of the, you know, box stores and buy a smaller one and have that close to your kitchen for kitchen fires because most of them are grease fires. But understand, you know, there's a certain...
They don't last long.
They don't last long, and there's a certain way, and most of the time what we find is that people who've never run a fire extinguisher before cause a bigger fire by spraying onto a... And most of the kitchen fires are grease fires, and they spray so close to the grease that the propellant actually throws the grease out of the pan.
Splatters it all around.
And splatters it onto the wall, and then all of a sudden your wall's on fire. So, you know, you do want to practice. But spend some money, ask a question or two. And stop in at your local fire department. There isn't a single person that's at a fire department that's going to go, you know what, I got better things to do than explain to you how you can help save your home.
This is complete crap that you would even walk in here and try to figure out how to prevent a fire. That's my business, for God's sake.
Yeah. So. Guys that are involved as a firefighter are passionate about getting their message out. I mean, this is like a calling. It truly is. It's like being in law enforcement, a firefighter, being in the military. This is a calling. They are so passionate about the stuff that they want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to find anybody that's going to go, look it up on the internet. You know, these guys are going to talk to you about it. They're going to explain to you. And a lot of times fire departments will have some kind of an open house one time or another of the year where you get to actually discharge a fire extinguisher. So you'll know what it's like.
And, you know, the size of the fire extinguisher, you know, this is one of those situations where size matters.
Yes, it does.
Because when you pull that trigger and that entire fire extinguisher is discharged within 5 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, that's not good enough, okay?
No.
Go ahead and spend the extra money. You literally should spend $100 or more on a fire extinguisher.
Right.
And they have gauges on them. You need to have them checked out annually.
That's right.
And
most of them can be recharged. If you're looking at a disposable fire extinguisher, put it back on the shelf.
Yeah.
Look at one that can actually be recharged or, you know, and if you have any questions about it, take it to the fire department. They'll let you know whether or not it's even usable anymore or you should just get rid of it.
Well, there's companies out there that's their job, to recharge them and everything. And it's just not expensive. If you already own the fire extinguisher, it's not expensive to have
that's
it checked
correct.
And inspected and recharged.
Yeah. So, you know, get one. Get a couple. I mean, you know, like I said, we're talking about... You know, if you can stop a fire immediately versus having to call 911 and have a fire department stop your engulfed house, look at the headache and pain.
It doesn't make any difference how much insurance you have. It ain't worth it, I guarantee you.
Yeah, you're going to have a bigger headache and heartache than, you know, if you actually had a fire extinguisher.
And when you're going through this with your family, make sure everybody fully understands where it is.
Right.
You know, maybe don't keep it right next to the stove. If the stove's going to be engulfed in flames, try to keep it over there, you know, in the pantry or something like that.
That's correct.
You know, nobody wants to walk in and look at a fire extinguisher bolted to the wall, but, you know, you got to have a fire extinguisher.
Yeah, it's there for a reason. Second off, smoke detectors. Most people have smoke detectors in their house, but if you haven't tested them, you should be changing them. And here's the rule of thumb that we go by. Moving the clocks back, it's not difficult to change the... change the battery. Now, newer homes are probably going to have a pre-wired one into the electrical, but there's typically a battery backup.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to change that battery also. In case the power, for some unknown reason, goes out, that alarm's going to go off because of the battery.
Now, what do they say about putting them in kitchens, you know, and where to put them and everything?
Well, anywhere, you know, you're going to have some kind of a utility, you should have one.
Mm-hmm.
The top of stairwells, you should have one. At the base of a stairwell, you should have one. In the utility rooms, you should have them. And then, you know, we could get into the carbon monoxide detectors also. But, you know, hallways, bedrooms, they all should have them. They're inexpensive. And like I said, you know, if one of them, God forbid, fails, you don't want to go, well, I had one in my house and it just didn't go off.
You can get like a 4-pack for $20.
Yeah, they're very cheap to get. And like I said, if you've had one for more than probably 5 years, I would look at replacing it.
You know,
the sensor is only good for so long.
And correct me if I'm wrong, the sensor is actually determining particles in the air.
That's correct.
And the particles in the air, meaning the smoke.
Right.
One thing I would caution people about is, you know, in the kitchen, I know those are the first ones that somebody rips the battery out of.
Yeah.
That's why I brought that up. You know, got to put the battery back in it. Okay.
Yeah.
You know,
because you burnt the pizza and
the smoke detector's going off and it's annoying and it's driving you crazy.
Yeah.
You know what? That's what it's actually designed to do. And you're going to have to.
That's right. It's designed to annoy you.
Right.
Wake
if you've
you up.
Got it maybe directly over the stove, maybe that isn't the best place if your wife is going to burn the food every night. You know. But if you take the battery out, it needs to go back in.
That's right.
That's all there is to it.
Ah, the last thing I want to talk about is fireplaces. People are getting ready to, you know, and I'm sure people have been starting to use their fireplaces to start warming their homes and using it for heat. Have those chimneys inspected by somebody who's trained to do it. Don't just run a, you know, go get a brush and a big string and run it down through and pull it up and think that you've cleaned it. You know, they're going to be able to identify if you've got an issue with your chimney, whether or not there's creosote being built up, whether or not the mortar is starting, because most of the fires don't, you know, the fire is actually contained down in the fireplace pit, but the fires that burn your house down are up in the chimney.
Right.
Because of excessive.
Well, and let me just explain that real quick. What happens with, like at my house was built in the 60s. You've been there, Rod. You know what I'm talking about. It's a brick house. Mm-hmm. And the chimneys, we don't use our fireplace because I just don't like the mess and I'm not there enough. But the chimneys are made out of brick. And if you get up on the roof and you look down, you're looking at basically brick walls. And it's not a very big opening. It's maybe 10 by 10. I don't know. I mean, you'd never be able to fit down in there. But we had it inspected, and they said you're going to have to put a liner in there because what can happen is if there's cracks in that mortar, the creosote starts building up and it starts getting back into those cracks. And it takes about, typically for wood or creosote or whatever, about 400 degrees will ignite them. They have a combustion point about 400 degrees. Then it starts burning the creosote. Hence, you have a chimney fire.
Right.
Not really dangerous. Unless it is starting to burn through that crack that's in the mortar. Now, all of a sudden, you've got a fire burning inside that crack, and it just smolders on through into the building materials, which is usually 2x4 stud walls, and it will literally burn your house from the inside out.
That's correct. So, you know, and if you have any question whatsoever, you don't use it. Just stop using it until you have somebody who is trained and certified. And there are certifications for these chimney sweeps, the chimney inspectors. Don't just, you know, say, hey, you know, my neighbor, he's been burning wood for 20 years, you know. I'm going to ask him to come over and take a look at it. If you've never operated, if you just bought a house that has a fireplace in it and you're interested in it, don't just automatically start burning wood in it.
Yeah, this goes back to what I said at the beginning of the show. We have to think about our house as a series of different systems.
Right.
And believe me, that fireplace is its own system.
That's
its own beast.
Do you know how to operate a flue? Do you know how to put a fire out once, you know, do you just let it burn until the embers smolder? Or what happens if it starts to, you know, if you start to get a backdraft? And you know, there are a lot of things that people don't understand. You know, they see fires in people's homes and adding wood, and they just think, oh, that's all it's going to do. There's a natural stack effect, so that smoke's automatically going to go back or go up the chimney.
If your house is leaky enough to have makeup air.
That's right.
You know, I mean, basically, even they're thinking, we should have somebody on about fireplaces.
Yeah.
But the thinking now has changed because we're building our house tight enough. Matter of fact, my brother built a house, and I don't know if you remember him talking about this.
Yeah.
The house was too tight.
Yeah.
There wasn't enough air coming into the house to run the fireplace, and there wasn't a good enough draft as a result.
Right.
So he literally had to open the window a little bit if he wanted to run his fireplace.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, but people don't think of those things. They're just thinking, I'm going to just start a fire.
There's 1,000 safety issues. I mean, do you have kids around?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I got these great glass doors
that
protects the children from going in there. And I can tell you a horror story about that, but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Those doors heat up. It's time that, you know, it's time to think about these things.
That's absolutely correct.
And, you know, are your children safe? Are they back far enough from the fire?
Right.
Or I've got a screen, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're just about out of time. If you need to get a hold of us at Midwest Basement Systems, please give us a call. At 1-800-556-5697.
Locally at 515-289-1606.
Get on the website, MidwestBasementSystems.com. And if you do that, just go to the About Us section, go to the radio show. You can listen to previously recorded shows.
Right.
You can give us your topic. You know, if you want to talk about a certain thing that's not making sense, especially as related to building science, we're going to figure out what you're talking about, what your problem is, and try to get you through it.
Right. And most of the things that we talked about today, folks, you can find online. You know, there's plenty of outlets for fire prevention information.
Right. Planning. Nobody tries to keep it a secret.
No, absolutely not. So please, you know, there's plenty of ways.